Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you here. We're also pleased to have back on the program once again the man we'd like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore is his name. For a long time now, he's been stopping by on the first Wednesday of the month in the 10 o'clock hour, and we talk about food. And the way this works is that some divine inspiration, I don't know what it is, strikes him. So a guy with some stone tablets with that month's topic knocks on his door. And so we take that thing, and it may be a particular dish. It may be some kind of key ingredient. And we say, okay, we'll talk about that thing. And we encourage people to tell stories, to suggest recipes. Sometimes people have asked questions. We've had people call in over the years and said, look, I'm trying to make this thing, and it's just not working out for me. What do you think I'm doing wrong? We've done that kind of thing, too. We always have fun in doing this show. And this time around, Doyle said, well, it's summer, and the farmer's market is going, and we got a lot of good produce available. And there's one thing in particular now that people look forward to all year long, and that is corn. And he said, well, let's do that. And we sort of said, well, didn't we do that last summer at about this time?
And the summer before.
And we said, well, you know, it doesn't have to be new every time around. And something like this, it's something that everybody, I think probably almost everybody says, well, yeah, I like that. And I'm happy to have it. And so we'll talk about corn. And the idea is here, we're looking for something that's maybe a little bit unusual. There, you can cook it in the simplest way, and that's great. But there are also a lot of different things that you can do with it, different ways to prepare it. So if you have a favorite recipe, why don't you call in and share it with us? 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. Toll free, 800-222-9455. At any point, you can call in. I think here in our house, for the first time, we had corn just a couple of weeks ago. I think that it was there, and I don't know, maybe we just weren't rousting ourselves, you know, to get there to get it. But it's only been the last couple of weeks, and it seems like everything this year is kind of late.
A little bit, yeah.
It's gotten, because of the weather, things are not on their usual schedules.
Well, what did you do with the corn after you got it?
Just put it in a pot, you know. I think Mrs. Inge, she was the one who does this. And basically, I think what you do, she says, is get the water boiling, and put in a little bit of sugar and a little bit of lemon juice, and then put the corn in there and turn the heat off, and just let it sit in there for, I don't know, 10 minutes or something like that.
Okay. So not boiling.
Not boiling. So cooking, but kind of minimally cooking.
Poached.
Poached corn. You call it maize, maybe.
That's another story.
That's another story.
Oh.
And just have it like that. But you know, when we've done these programs in the past, I've always said, you know, every time I think I say, I've always kind of been curious about grilling it and still haven't managed to get around to doing that. So pretty much just, you know, the straight old-fashioned way.
Well, that's a good start.
We're getting some callers lined up already.
Yes.
Was there something in particular that got you thinking about this, other than it was
not
seasonal?
It was seasonal, but I have some recipes here, but I want to talk to folks about the way they're doing their corn.
All right. Well, we'll do that, starting with someone in Effingham. Line four.
Hi.
Hi.
A couple years ago, I discovered a really simple method to do corn. I'll never boil it again. You take it, 350-degree oven on cookie sheets, bake it in the husks for about 45 minutes, let it cool off a little bit. I'm to a point now where I just cut it off the cob, but the silks come off, and it is just wonderful corn. That's it.
Hmm.
That's pretty straightforward.
And I will never, ever cook corn any other way.
How did you come on to this method?
They were grilling it, and I'm just thinking, no, I can't grill it in the husks. So I thought, well, I'll just throw it in the oven and see what happens. And the corn just bakes. It's so sweet. Even the store-bought corn turns out pretty good.
Okay.
Okay, thank
you. Thanks for the tip. All right, very good.
That's quite an observation.
Okay, let's go on. And next is Champaign. This line one. Hello.
Hi. This is a way of cooking corn in with the husks, but not in them. What you do, I learned it in Colorado. It's a barbecue recipe. You get your coals good and hot, and open the husks of the corn, remove the silks, and remove the ear, and wrap the ear up in foil, and take as many people as you have, or as many husks as you have, trout, whole trout. Rainbow is the best. Lake and other trouts will do. And actually, I've tried it with other kinds of whole fish, and it works. Clean the fish if it isn't already. Put in half a spoonful or something of either butter or margarine, and the juice of about a quarter of a lemon or so, and put the fish. You can also use salt and pepper as the fish if you want, but I don't. Put the fish head first in the empty husk.
Oh.
Tie it up tight, and about the time that the fish is ready in the husks, which takes, maybe 5 minutes per side, the corn in the foil is done too, and you have your whole meal.
That's right. That's very interesting to cook the fish in the husk. I've not known about cooking other things in husks.
Well, some people do it in Colorado, and that's where I learned it. And your fish comes out wonderfully tender and moist and juicy and just mouthwatering, as well as the corn.
That's good. Actually, I do it opposite. I put the fish in the foil, and I leave the husks on the corn.
Okay.
That I would get done, but I like this idea a bit. Because the husks are going to flavor the fish just a little bit.
That's right.
And they're going to keep them moist.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I like that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Very good. Well, two good tips to start things off here. It's first Wednesday of the month. Has been for a long time our great pleasure to be talking about cooking with this guy we like to call our chef in residence. It's a purely honorary title, ladies and gentlemen. Doyle Moore, he stops by here on the program first Wednesday, 10 o'clock, and we talk about cooking. And this time around, he said, well, it's that time where there's good sweet corn available. You can go down to the farmer's market and get it. And how do you cook that? And he's saying, you know, are there some sort of interesting, slightly different ways, alternatives to just boiling it or roasting it in the oven or doing it on the grill, keeping it on the ear? 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455.
Now, a lot of folks in recent years, one of the things that interested me was that there are a lot of salads that are being made with corn. And I even saw a recipe the other day where they were brave enough to say, don't even cook it. If it's fresh, just cut it off and pop it in. I'm not sure about all of that. I think you want to blanch the corn. What it does is it kills the esters, I think, and that keeps it from turning into something else, which is either too starchy or too sugary. I forget. But I was surprised to see they said, oh, just cut it off. Just have at it. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And then used then in various salads. I hunted for the salad I was describing to you the other day. I cannot find that particular recipe, though I can come awfully close to it.
Yeah,
I'll talk about that later.
Well, and when we were talking about this on the telephone the other day, and it made me think of the recipe that when we did one of the television cooking shows, we had on the fellow who was the U of I volleyball coach.
Oh, yes.
And he had a terrific corn salad
that
recipe.
That was good, yes.
That was that had tomatoes in it. It had corn that was cut off the cob. And it had like a balsamic vinaigrette dressing, had fresh basil in it, had some garlic. I don't remember all the specifics of the recipe, but I was with him on that segment, and so he put it together, and it was really, really good.
That's totally different from things that are made like that about 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's gotten better,
yeah.
And I was kind of curious as to what has happened. Well, one of the things is people are not so edgy about balsamic vinegar. They want to use it.
And it was all the, I think the idea is that it was all the kind of thing that you make when you could get good, fresh ingredients.
Good,
so you wanted good fresh corn, good fresh tomatoes, fresh basil, all that kind of stuff that, we, you know, really good, strong, intense flavors. Right now it's at the peak, and now's the time you want to make something like, you're not going to make that one in January.
No, no, not at all.
Yeah. Let's talk with someone in Urbana. Line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Line one?
Yes.
Yeah, I was having a little problem hearing things. Yeah, well, of course, I grew up thinking that fresh corn meant you put the kettle on to boil and then you went out in the garden and picked the corn.
Right. Right. That's exactly the oldest recipe. You're right.
But can't do that these days, and most of us can't. Anyway, the conventional way of boiling corn on the cob is just to throw it in a pan of water or with or without salt. But some time ago, I came across a recipe that you put cider vinegar and sugar, approximately equal amounts, sort of just enough that you can actually taste the vinegar. I cannot, I'm sorry, give actual quantities because I splash in the cider and throw in a half a cup of sugar or something like that.
Yes.
And obviously it's going to depend on the size of your kettle too. But anyhow, then, you know, boil the corn in the normal fashion, except that if you do it this way, A, you have no need whatsoever of salt or butter or anything.
Oh, yes.
It just tastes absolutely marvelous as is, which is great if you're trying to avoid the salt bit and some of the you can put butter on it, but it's sort of it's a little bit on the gilding the lily side. It's not necessary. But just that extra, you know, the sugar vinegar bit, and you know, it makes it marvelously sweet, and well, there are whole cookbooks full of corn recipes once you've gotten to that stage.
Well,
provided you don't gobble down everything you've just gotten.
Well, that's true, but I don't believe I've ever heard about combining corn, I mean sugar and vinegar, but I can see what it would do.
I found that recipe, but somewhere, and I've been doing it ever since.
Well, good for you. That's a good hint. I like that.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Cider vinegar.
Well, that's now. See that what I guess we're doing in our house is something similar. At least we're putting in an acid and some sugar. So what we're doing is I think that what Celeste does is puts in the juice of say half a lemon.
Yes.
And some sugar. And I'm not sure how much, but not very much.
Not a lot.
But those two things, and you would think, and it's a pretty good sized pot. You would think, well, that really wouldn't be all that much of either one. I've never been quite sure what exactly that was doing, but it's good. So I figure, okay, you know what you're doing. It's good. You keep doing that, and. But I've often kind of wondered, well, what particularly having the presence of that little bit of acid that must be doing something chemical, but I've never really been sure, well, what?
Well, that's what I'm thinking about those esters that are hiding in the corn. They're good, but you want to eat them, but that's why you want to get the corn as quickly to the pot as you can. It's all a mystery.
Yeah. Let's talk to somebody Belgium. Line four. Hello.
Hello and good morning, gentlemen. I'm not going to add a recipe to your conversation today, but I'm going to add just a little convenience item that maybe you all haven't thought of. One of the problems with canning corn and dealing with corn is the cob sometimes. And how do you get the corn off the cob?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've found a nice little method that takes a little handiwork but does a fabulous job. If you happen to be able, the best one to get is Angel Food cake pan, and it's the ones that the center lifts out.
Oh, yes.
Take and lift it out and cut the top so it's just a bit bigger than the actual diameter of the hard part of the cob you don't want. And you sharpen it a little bit. It takes a little handiwork. I'm sure if you have a handy individual in the family, you can do it. It's not difficult. and then you take and put the insert back into the angel food cake pan, and you just push the corn down through the cob. Lo and behold, you have all the kernels on the outside and the cobs at the bottom. No longer a problem.
I see.
And now you can do it with the ones that don't lift out, but it's a little harder to cut the cone off and get the right shape. So that's my addition for today.
Well,
good day, gentlemen.
That sounds pretty good. I know there are various kinds of shredding devices, and I saw somebody on television the other day. I was stunned because I always hold the corn up so it's vertical and cut down the sides. They laid it down on the side and went whack, you know, and cut off a whole half side and turned it in a half side. I was pretty stunned at that.
Huh.
They didn't remark about it, but I certainly did.
Isn't there some sort of tool that's like a ring with handles on the side?
Yes,
and
there
that's
is.
That's exactly what it's for. You sort of stand it up, put it over the top, and just push the thing down, and in one pass, it just...
Yeah, that's a modern way of doing it. There was an old way that was sort of looked like a half of a scooped cucumber. So you ran.
So you did what, like one half at a time?
Yeah. So you would run this over these blades, and that would cut it off. But you would have to go through it two or three times to do that. And then there's always the fact that they sometimes somebody will say, be sure to take the back of the knife and then scrape all of that milk and fluids out of that, because it leaves a little bit when you cut it. You don't get it clear down to where you want it.
Yeah.
And that's always interesting to me, is whether they mention that particular thing or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought I kind of like this idea of this machine. What to do when you're tired of making angel food cakes?
Let's talk again with somebody else here in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi there. Mm-hmm. I wanted to add a little bit to the corn salad recipe that you guys were talking about. I've always loved corn salads, and I've done things with them in which I've added fresh green peas and beets, and also in the summer, which really works well with it, is a plum cut up or a pear.
A pear, yeah.
It adds a nice little bit of sweetness, and it seems a little odd and counterintuitive to have vegetables and fruit together, but in a salad, it's just heavenly, and the corn holds it all together. Also with balsamic vinegars, there are a number of balsamic vinegars out there that are orange or strawberry or lemon flavored, and they're a lighter balsamic vinegar.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, you can get them in stores around town, and it's lighter. You can use a little more in terms of how much the vinegar you use with the oil. But they're really delicious, and they add something extra to it. And if it's a little too sweet for you, what I tend to do is balance it off with some brown mustard in the mix, and that works out very nicely. So that's a lot of fun. But also, since we're talking about corn, I'd like to just mention that one of my favorite things in the world is polenta.
Oh, yes.
It's a very fine corn meal that you can cook up until it's nice and thick, and you can put literally anything you want in it, cut asparagus or garlics or sausage or anything else, and then put it in the mold, let it cool down, and it just forms this nice, firm, I wouldn't call it a corn pudding because it's not sweet, but it's absolutely delicious. And then once it's firm, it's good to do this like the day before a meal or very early in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Once it's firm, you can either heat it up again for dinner, or you can put it on the grill and grill the piece.
And you could grill it, yes.
That's really good.
Grilled
really
polenta amazing. Is
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
So, that's neat. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. We are talking this morning with our man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. Talking about corn.
I like the plum and the pear with the corn.
I would never have occurred to me.
Well,
to do that.
That's why I say these things are happening around us. I mean, they come from the fact that, well, I did it this way. Well, I wonder what would happen if. And I love that. And I've sensed that that's exactly what people are doing. That's a good thought.
All right. You have a good recipe to share or a cooking tip? We're talking about corn. We decided this time around to just concentrate on this because it's the time of year when it's out there and there's a lot of good corn and you want to enjoy it. And we're thinking of, well, different things that you can do Grilling it, boiling it, that's fine. But we're always looking for different ways to stretch things and to push them into different directions. So if you have a good recipe, give us a call, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. You want to share something that you brought?
This is kind of part of my own upbringing. My mother made corn fritters, and my brother was very, very fond of them. I'm puzzled because I can't remember them being I can't remember them. And so I was wondering if he was 10 years older than I was, there was a period of time when maybe he ate a lot of them. Mm-hmm. But he didn't have a recipe. Mother didn't have a recipe book, but I did finally find a corn fritter recipe that satisfied him and all. It's it takes eggs and baking powder and salt and flour and milk, and then corn that you cut off the cob. And so what you're making is it's a little batter. That's 4 eggs, 3.5 tablespoons of baking powder, teaspoon of salt, 8 cups of flour and 6 cups of milk, and 3 cups of whole corn. And if you want to do frozen or canned, that would be perfectly all right. And beat the eggs up and put the dry ingredients in, and then put the milk in, and then mix it with a spoon until you have a smooth batter, and then you fold in the corn so it gets in inside the batter, and then not too much fat, only about an inch of cooking oil, and heat it to 325 degrees, and then dip the batter in and fry it until it's brown on both sides, and cook it until it's done. You can test it with a toothpick to see if any batter isn't cooked on the inside. And then they were rolled in powdered sugar and served warm. I mean, it's sort of like, what? I thought this was going to go on the side of the potatoes and all that. Mm. No, it's a totally different kind of taste. I think that's sort of Pennsylvania Dutch influence of my mother's cooking. But that was one that was quite a favorite with my brother. I still wonder where they are.
We got some other people to talk with. We're about midway through this part of Focus 580, and we'll go to some Urbana callers. And first, line one, right here. Hello. Call there, line one in Urbana. Okay. How about line two in Urbana? Hello.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I have a corn salad that's equal parts of corn cut from the cob and cubed tomato, green pepper, a Texas 10-15 sweet onion, which I insist grown here in central Illinois, sweet dahlia, and some green pepper and perhaps some yellow or red pepper. And then for a dressing, I use low-fat yogurt.
Oh, that's interesting.
Or I sometimes use a white vinegar that has had tarragon added and steeped in the vinegar.
Yes, tarragon would be a good taste with that.
And then add some sugar and some oil. Olive oil.
Yes.
And so I make those variations.
That sounds very good. I like the tarragon vinegar with that. And then the corn you just cut it off of the
cut it off the cob,
yeah.
Preferably within say half an hour of taking it from the garden.
We hope so. That's the best. That is the best part. I like that. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
All right, very good. Questions again. Questions are welcome. Comments welcome. Recipes welcome. It's the first Wednesday of the month.
That would be a very cooling with the yogurt. The yogurt and the vinegar would be very. It would be almost like a raita.
That's what I was kind of thinking. Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Okay. Other recipes, we'd be happy to have them. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. At any point here, you give us a call. And this time around, it's our monthly cooking show with Doyle. And he said, well, it's the time of year where there's good corn around, so let's talk about corn and different things that you can do with it. So if you have a recipe to share, do that.
Well, I have one. This one is a mind blower. This one excited me when I saw it, and I've made it, and I couldn't believe how good it was. It's bourbon corn chowder.
I think it's the bourbon.
It is the bourbon.
Anything that with bourbon in it, you're there.
In fact, I just cooked with bourbon last night. Yes, this one does use canned cream corn, but I am such a fan of canned cream corn anyway. I would just eat it right out of the can when no one is looking. That was one of my secret devices, was to have lots of canned cream corn. I could just, if I felt sorry for myself, I could open it up and sit there and eat it. And I always enjoyed that. So this particular corn chowder is really good. I will give it to you very quickly. 4 tablespoons of unsalted butter, 1 small onion cut into half-inch dice, 2.5 cups or 1 can of canned cream corn, 1/4 cup of bourbon, and 1/4 teaspoon of grated nutmeg, kosher salt, fresh ground black pepper, and 2 or 3 drops of red hot pepper sauce, and 1 cup of a basic chicken stock or you could use a vegetable stock if you wanted, and 1/2 cup of heavy cream. And the making of it is so simple. Melt the butter, stir in the onion, and cook it for 5 minutes, and then stir in the corn. And then in a small saucepan, heat the bourbon and ignite it and let it flame for 1 minute, and then pour the bourbon still flaming over the corn mixture and stir in the remaining ingredients, which is the cream and the basic chicken stock. Ooh, is that good? Is that ever good? And it isn't. It's fulfilling as well as delicious. I loved it.
Well, you got to be careful when you flame your bourbon, though. Got to be very, very, very,
well,
very, very careful.
Truth of the matter is, I didn't flame it.
Well, that's, I suppose, it's what happens then when you flame it is that it burns off the alcohol.
Yes.
And maybe makes it slightly less harsh. And I suppose some people, if they say, well, I don't want to have the alcohol, well, you can get the flavors from the liquor, but you don't get the alcohol if you do that.
Well, it was kind of a surprise because the cream and the bourbon do go together rather well, and then the corn is just there on the side.
We are a little bit past our midpoint here. We got another caller. We got ready to go, and we're having our bourbon here and having a good time. Galva is the next here, line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Well, I have a suggestion. A friend of mine introduced this to me. When you have your basic macaroni and cheese recipe, and
oh, yes,
good for winter, summer, any time, because kids love it. Whether or not you're going to bake it, whether or not you're going to put it on top of the stove and just do the whole thing, just put in some fresh cut off corn into it, or in the wintertime, canned or frozen corn, and a little bit of red pepper, and it makes it so pretty and adds nutrition. And then the man who was talking about the salad with the corn and the tomatoes,
oh,
and
yes,
the yellow peppers and everything, I just wanted to add something to that, because I found that the time of year that corn is at its prime, apple skins are getting very tough, and I hate to peel apples. But I found out that you can put peeled apples in with any mixture of vegetables and fruits, and it just adds a tart, delicious flavor to that salad.
Oh, that sounds kind of good. So,
yeah.
So chopped apples in with
yes,
corn, with the corn salad.
Yes, and if you can leave the skins on, that's fine too. But they get pretty tough at this time of year.
I never worry about that.
Right.
I just eat them anyway.
Right.
That's good. Oh, that's another fruit with the corn.
Uh It is. It's
yes.
very good.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We appreciate it. That's, again, that's really interesting because I guess I, that's just something I wouldn't have thought. I can think of all sorts of things to combine with the corn, peppers and tomatoes and a lot of other things of that ilk. But to put fruit in, I wouldn't have thought about that.
Sounds vaguely Southern in taste to me. Because in the South, a lot of fruit is used. Often it was dried fruit, and then they would be reconstituted and mixed up with various sort of things and curious things like curry powder and other things that would do it. So fruit in, cooked into things is very Southern. I think I'm going to have to try that. fight for who gets the pear and who gets the apple with the corn salad.
333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free 800-222-9455. It's our regular monthly show on cooking and when we toss around stories and recipes and cooking tips. Doyle Moore is here. He's the man we call our chef in residence. We've been doing this for a long time. And he generally picks up some subject. He said, well, let's talk about this. And this time around, he said, corn. It's the time of year when it's there. And what can you do with it other than the most sort of basic traditional kinds of preparing, ways of preparing it?
And
not that there's anything wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that,
I'll
tell you.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all.
That's absolutely right. 333-WILL and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Well, at the time of year like this, when there's lots and lots of corn, maybe there's more than people can eat. I'm sure that it's easy enough to freeze it. Have you ever dried it?
Yes. I'm glad. How kind of you to lead into my next wonderment. Dried corn is exceedingly special in two different ways. Yes, that is one of the things that my mother did do was to dry corn. And that's a Pennsylvania Dutch technique. And she just dried it in a very slow oven, 250, or would even leave it out in the sun and let it dry. And then it's put away and it's preserved. A brand of dried corn. I had to look it up on the internet. I did find it, and it was again in a Pennsylvania Dutch category of food. And I was going to bring some today, but I didn't do that. But there's something about the corn that has been dried. It has another flavor it has a perfume that is totally different from anything like fresh corn, mm-hmm. I find that taste and that flavor really very exotic. And all you have to do is put boiling water over the dried corn, and let it sit for a period of time, and it rehydrates itself, and then go ahead and cook it. And I like it cooked with lots of pepper and cream, and I really enjoy that taste of the dried corn. It's just a little different, and it seems it to me it was sort of more reminiscent of the farm days. You know, all those tastes and flavors that you get from the prepared foods and all. But it dried corn is really a wonderment,
yeah.
And you don't have to do much more with it than add water and then put some cream and pepper, cook it and eat it.
That I could see that it would like with other things when you dry them, it somehow distills or concentrates the flavor.
It does, but it's a totally different flavor than you've ever gotten from anything else.
Huh.
Totally different. It's worth investigating, or even worth doing. But I remember she'd dry it, put it in jars, would have it in the middle of the winter when mm-hmm. you didn't have fresh corn. Mm-hmm. And it's just the way it's done.
Right.
Good stuff.
Well, let's see. We have about 15 minutes left, and we'd be happy to have calls with comments, questions, stories, recipes. We're talking about corn, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. At some point here, you got something to offer, you can do that. I talked earlier about how every summer I say, you know, it's my list of things I say, you know, I'm going to do this and never have. And that one of the things on the list was to grill it, to put it on the, to use the charcoal grill.
Oh, yes.
And to cook it that way. And for some reason, maybe just because it's the, we're cooking something else and the corn is in addition to that and it gets cooked inside. I just haven't done that. Have you done that?
I have done the corn in the husks on the grill, and you can pull off the silks if you want to, and then you don't need to tie the end up or anything. But put it in cold water, ice water, and let it sit for several minutes, and then just pop it on top of the grill, and then the outside of the husks gets burnt. And the inside is really quite nice. I like, however, to cook corn directly over the heat without the husks.
Mm-hmm.
I like that charred. It's not charred.
But it's like caramelized.
It's caramelized and just a little brown. And on the street vendors in Mexico, they just had them all. And in Greece, there were street vendors that had corn, and I was sort of surprised at that because that's not a European flavor corn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To Urbana. Let's talk with someone else right here. Line one. Hello.
Hi. I'm just calling to say I certainly second your guest's opinion of dried corn. I think it's absolutely wonderful. And I am wondering, do you know where I can get some? Because I had some last summer and now I'm out.
I should have brought that information with me, but do you play with the internet at all?
Is the caller still there? I think we lost the caller. Either he can try calling back, or I am now on the web here, and into my search engine I put dried corn, and it looks to me like... Now, there are a lot of what I'm seeing here are recipes, but here's some place where you can get it mail order. Looks like there are probably some others. So I think what Doyle was going to ask the caller,
yes,
was, you know, if you have internet access, you can probably get it that way.
That's the way I found it, and it was someplace in Pennsylvania.
This is, and well, for example, here it's Pennsylvania, but someplace called Zingerman's Roadhouse. That looks like that's a restaurant, but it looks like they have mail order and, well, anyway, rather than me sitting here and doing this like a dope, I think that the thing is to, yeah, just go on, just put into your web browser, whichever you use, put in dried corn.
Dried corn.
And I'm sure that you'll find someplace where where you can order it. All right.
And it came right away.
Yeah, okay. Let me see. Let's go to a cell phone next, I think. Line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, good.
I've enjoyed listening to all your great recipes, but I have one for you.
Great.
And it was made by my grandmother, who was from Louisiana, and she called it succotash and corn. It was made with okra, fresh okra. You use about a half pound of fresh okra, 2 ears of corn cut off the cob, fresh tomatoes, and the unusual ingredient was dried shrimp.
Dried shrimp?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That she got from an Oriental food store.
Hmm.
And you soak the shrimp. In water to soften it up, and then you fry it all together, and you put some onion, green pepper, salt, pepper, and it's just the best.
Okra and corn and tomatoes and dried shrimp, and onion and green peppers.
Yes.
That sounds like, yeah, that does sound like a succotash, except I was waiting for the beans. I've never heard of that combination, but that really sounds good, especially the tomatoes and the okra is going to be good. The corn is going to be the booster of all that, and then the shrimp is going to be that little little soupçon at the end. That's really good. I like that recipe.
It's just delicious.
And it's a Louisiana recipe.
It is, right. She was from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Well, we know about that place. That's good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Uh-huh. Thank you.
Thank
Bye.
You. Let's go back here. I think, again, we have another someone else in Urbana here at line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
That last recipe sounds to die
Doesn't
for.
Doesn't that? Yes. I'm going to run out and get that dried shrimp and okra.
Now my recipe is much simpler, and it's really good to bring if you're going to a cookout or to a buffet party.
Yes.
To take along. And it's a corn casserole recipe. Have you had
Oh, good.
Yet?
No, I haven't. I was saving corn pudding, but I want to know about the corn casserole.
Okay, it's very simple, and you could use fresh corn, but this calls for a can of whole kernel corn undrained.
Yes.
A can of cream-style yellow corn.
And cream-style, yes.
8 ounce carton of sour cream.
Sour cream.
2 eggs that you beat.
Yes.
A box of corn muffin mix. It's
okay, Jiffy corn muffin mix.
Well, you
yes.
can say it. I didn't want to necessarily
well, yes, you
give
can.
A brand.
Nah, you Jiffy. Tell it.
And a stick of butter that you melt.
And butter, yes.
And you basically mix them all together. You put them into a lightly oiled casserole dish. You bake for 350 degrees for 55 to 60 minutes. And it's wonderful. And anything that's left over, you can put in the microwave and reheat.
That would be very good. Now, that sounds very much like the spoon bread recipe that the young fellow had on our first show, remember?
Oh, uh-huh.
Because that used cream corn and canned corn and sour cream and eggs and Jiffy mix and butter.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to say in terms of the calorie intake and cholesterol and all that.
Oh.
But, you know, you have to have good food.
That's exactly it. So
and
don't,
it's a trade-off. You just eat lighter.
You eat less of it. That's you know, we eat too much anyway, so eat less of it. That's a very good recipe.
Yes,
I like
it is
that.
Yummy, and people really enjoy it. And it's not something that most people have or make, you know, and so it's always a little special when you have it. So there you go.
Yes, thank you. The Jiffy mix, or a mix very much like it, has a little sugar in it, and so it gives a nice sweet taste,
mm-hmm.
if you remember. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Maybe we have about 6 or 7 minutes left in this part of Focus. It's our first Wednesday of the month cooking show with the guy that we call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. And he said this time around, you know, he picks the topic every time and says, you know, it's sometimes it's seasonal. Sometimes it's just his mood. And sometimes I don't know what. He calls me up about a week before and says, okay. Here's what we're going to do. And this time he called and said, well, you know, we've done corn before, but, you know, why not?
Corn,
why not
but,
do that again?
But look at the response today. There is exactly what I expected, and that is a wider use of corn than just do this, do that, and that's all there is to do. And we've gotten some very, very interesting, and I know that these are cooking techniques that have come on in the last few years, and I'm sort of interested in how it's sort of spread out. A lot of things. Well, there was a time when you didn't even know what salsa was,
mm-hmm.
let alone listen to it. And you had no idea what it was, and all of a sudden salsa crept in, and then there started to be these bean salads that had some corn in them and some peppers.
Uh-huh.
And then what happened was that we have a tendency to want to mix a lot of mannerisms of cooking, and so you sort of got the outer rim oriental flavors begin to creep into salsas that made them kind of a Thai food was very, very influential in what we eat now in the way we do it. And so I knew this was happening. I'm interested in that's exactly what the response is.
You know, just the other day at our house, I think we were looking for something different and something that we hadn't done before. And we subscribed to Cooking Light magazine, which always has a lot of good recipes. And we saw one that we did the other day. It was a recipe for grilled shrimp with a kind of a jerk style sort of seasoning. And there was a little fruit salsa that they – a very simple fruit salsa to go with that that used pineapple, cucumber, some red onion, some cilantro, and a little bit of cider vinegar.
Cider vinegar.
And it was very good, and it went nicely with the shrimp. I'm not quite sure about the cider vinegar. I might like to have something a little bit less, you know, something. But anyway, it was really good, and we were sitting there talking about, well, when did fruit salsas
the Caribbean.
So that's where they come.
Yeah.
Where they come from.
Yeah.
So it would make sense for something like the kind of flavors that they were doing here with the shrimp, and to pair a kind of a fruit salsa.
A fruit salsa, yeah. That is from the Caribbean and some Thai. There are some Thai fruit. A lot of mango, mm-hmm. passion fruit, guava, and such like that are from Caribbean.
Yeah, and I was surprised by the combination of the pineapple and the cucumber, because I really wouldn't have thought about that. But actually, it worked together very nicely. I'm not, you know, the cucumber has this sort of clean taste, and the pineapple, of course, was very sweet. But somehow those two things, they were just fine with
one
another.
We may have to do a show on cucumbers, because I'm telling you, they are a very peculiar thing. And I'm finding recipes, and I've tried it myself, of cooked cucumber, where you would broil it or saute it. And I think there's a Chinese dish that uses cucumber, and it sort of hides, and you have to kind of dig some of these things out. But that's exactly what's happening. The cooking has just gotten wider and wider. I love it.
Well, now here, and I think this was – Kyle, was this your question? Kyle Mabry, who is on the controls here, he weighed in here, and he said, well, he says fruit salsa, chutney, what makes something a chutney?
A lot of spices, a sweet and vinegar. A lot of vinegar, and it can even be white vinegar. But I like to use cider vinegar, and hot spices, and then other spices, cloves, cardamom, allspice, and cinnamon. And certainly cloves, and then sugar, mm-hmm. and brown sugar especially, and then that is cooked down for a long period of time. And salsas, a lot of them are very fresh, so
they're not cooked. Most of them not cooked at all.
Most are not cooked at all. Uh-huh. But the chutneys are of course, there are other kinds of chutneys too, where it's just mint and vinegar and hot pepper, and then that's ground up in a blender, and that is a sauce. It is called a chutney as well. It's a fresh chutney, but the one that the English like to use, it's the English folks that do it a lot. It, in fact, Major Gray chutney was what it was. You couldn't buy it in India. And you couldn't cook it in India. It was made in England and spread all over the world. I love Major Gray chutney. It's not a hot mango chutney, and very tasty. But that's where it started. And then you can make chutneys out of – I have a friend who makes chutney out of green beans.
No.
Yes. That's my first thought was, what? And there it was. Pile in the sugar and the vinegar and the spices and cook it down with a little onion, and you got a wonderful taste. Hmm. So, but those were things that were added to go with more with meats and savory dishes.
Yeah.
But the uncooked chutneys, uncooked salsas. They go with meats too, don't they?
Yeah. Well, that's we had several different cooking magazines, and also there was one recent that came that had an entire article that was chutneys, salsas, and relishes. It with the idea was, here are these things, And here's some suggestions for different elements of each, how you put that together, what they pair nicely with. And it just I think it's interesting now we're expanding our tastes. We're looking for little things to add a little spark. And sometimes they're really very complex mixtures of things way beyond the kind of condiments that we grew up with.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And most of them are made at the moment. What you and I grew up with were things that were canned and put away. I mean, you know, chow chow and piccalilli and all that were canned, and you used them during the winter months and the rest of the time too. But these others are, and I sometimes find recipes and they only make a cup. You know, you sit there and work and chop, you end up with a cup, and that was all there was. It's done right on the moment.
Yeah, and then you make it, you eat it.
And you eat it, and it's gone. That was it. Yep. Well, I know these things are happening with food, and we've proven today that a lot of folks know about it.
Mm. We're coming down to the end here. Any last sort of corn-related thought that you have?
No, not really. Oh, yes. Didn't I wake up this morning, and what do you think? First thing, little boy blue, come blow your horn. Sheep's in the meadow and the cow's in the corn. Now, the corn that the cows were in, it was really wheat, because wheat is called corn in Europe.
Really?
And so somebody told me a story which I had never heard before, and it was this. During the war, flour and such things were impossible to get, and so the Americans replied to responses in England, and they said, oh, we would love to have some corn flour, please. And so they sent them cornmeal. The guy was a baker. He said, what do I do with this? He had no idea what to do with cornmeal. I'd never heard that story before.
What they were expecting was wheat flour.
Wheat flour. And, you know, and of course, but they call it corn flour. And it got all mixed. I'd never heard that. Huh. And I'm kind of curious about that, because surely there must have been some knowledge of corn meal. But they tried to cook with it, and they couldn't cook with it. And so, I don't know. It was one of the things right during or after the war where we were sending supplies.
Well, we're going to have to stop there. We're at the end of the time, with the promise that, I guess, that we'd be here in August?
Next month? Today's August. Hello. Try to remember that day in September.
Check that calendar.
When all you can remember is it's not November.
I've been doing this far too long. We'll see him in September. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Bill Moore, the man we call our chef in residence. First Wednesday of the month, we do these shows.